Before I do a talk, I just want to say a few words about Dana. The Pali word, as you know, for generosity. And sometimes we're kind of really low key at Sims about how we talk about Dana and really emphasize the freely given. No one's turned away for any ability to pay. But Sims does need support. It does need your financial support to continue to pay our rent, to pay our expenses, and the teachers also need that support. And it seemed like a small percentage of people actually attend to it. So keep it in a life practice. You know, it really ties into a heart of this tradition that we started coming to the West. Teachers decided not to charge for their teachings, like have a set fee, to just trust that if they offered it, people would offer support back. And sometimes we lose connection with that, with all the busyness and being online. So I encourage you to just reflect on that, to reflect that, you know, your participation is vital, but also your support is also vital. So I think Gaurav put up the donate button, if you could throw that up again. And then here in the room, of course, there's the baskets over there. All right, just a couple words about that. All right, so forgiveness. So reflecting on forgiveness as a process, that it's sometimes it takes a while for our hearts to be able to open to it, to release that hurt, that contraction, forgiveness to allow someone else into our heart. And the ceremony we're going to do in a little bit, I often think of as really setting the intention behind that forgiveness. Sharon, could you drop me down just a little bit? I'm getting a little bit of reverb. Thank you. It sets the intention that, you know, may I forgive you? May I forgive you for the harm that you have caused? May I receive that forgiveness? And sometimes things are ripe and we just open to that forgiveness and it's wonderful. Other times it sets that intentionality because it does take sometimes things that really you feel hurt and charged by. It takes a while for us to really open to those, to really release that. So forgiveness as a process or a path. Now, it's interesting because some of the parts of forgiveness we can do very intentionally. We can bring our energy, our effort to bear on those. And other parts we have to just surrender to. We have to let a certain ripeness arise. It has a certain, like a ripe fruit falling from a tree. It has its own timing, its own rate, its own readiness to fall, to open. And just one day we wake up and realize, well, my heart's just not hardened like it used to be. Something has softened, something has let go. There's this absence of something that I was always kind of keeping me constricted. The resentment, the hurt, the anger, the fear. Something really lets go of us. And to help that process, to kind of make that ripeness, I just want to touch upon a few things to help that ripeness come together. This is the parts we can work on ourselves, especially for things which are really stuck or relationships that really matter. If we really care about having a healthy current relationship, we have to be willing to really listen to each other, to really hear how we've caused harm, how we've caused heartache to another person, and be able to be willing to share in a compassionate way how we too have caused harm. So it's this acknowledgement, the simple acknowledgement of what occurred, what happened, and the impact of that. So we can do this within ourselves. We can do that with another person, you know, ideally the person who's involved, but sometimes that's unfortunately impossible or very difficult. But at least having a spiritual friend, someone who's willing to be very honest with you, but in a compassionate way. Someone who holds your own well-being to the forefront and can reflect where you maybe be a little off or a little stuck, a little deluded yourself. Someone who cares for your well-being in a compassionate way, is willing to say things which may be hard to hear, but you can listen and hear them. So having that kind of a support as you work with this process of forgiveness. So a simple acknowledgement of what actually happened, what actually occurred. This is actually a little trickier than it originally sounds, because it's hard to be objective about it. It's hard not to say, you know, when you were belittling me, when you were hurting me, when you made me mad. These are all interpretations. Those are all very true reactions. But the actual basic thing, when you wrote that email, when you turned your back on me, when you didn't stand up for me, when you didn't have that conversation when I wanted to, when you didn't own what you did, whatever it might be, just that objective statement, it's so helpful, because you can almost agree that, okay, this actually happened. This is actually what occurred. Because we tend to get caught in our interpretation of that, why someone did something. We interpret and place that on. It's so hard to hear that, because you're hearing not only your what you did, but also the person's reaction to that, people's impact. So when I'm working with this myself, with my loved ones, the people I care about, I try to tease those two apart. Here's the objective thing that happened. Do you think that happened? Did you actually write that email? Did you actually do that action? And then there's the impact of that action. This is both acknowledging someone else's impact on you and also acknowledging your own impact, the emotions, the feelings, and also the beliefs. What does it tie into these, the story of your life, how you, those tender areas, that willingness to really acknowledge this. This goes into some very tender territory. If you have the right conditions, you have enough, safe enough a container, a person who's willing to really listen and hold you, it can be a beautiful opening and deepening. And there's a level of vulnerability as you do this. So start to tease apart those two aspects, the action and the impact of that action, the interpretation and our feelings, our reaction to that. And then finally, a commitment to not cause a similar harm in the future. So much of this is just being eyes wide open to how your actions caused impact, and to be able to share that impact on it from others' actions. So with that clear seeing, there's often this commitment that arises to not do that again, to be more clear in the future. This is a tricky thing, and it does take a certain level of container or commitment to the relationship for it to really work. And I, for myself, being a father and being a husband, there's many times that I've really listened to the impact of my actions on my daughter and my wife. Listening to it without that defensiveness, without that sense of having to justify, but to listen, to set that aside and just listen deeply to how they're affected. And when I've been able to do this, it really touched into the dukkha that I've caused, the suffering that I've caused. And in that touching of that, there's a natural commitment to not do it again, to at least try the best, because we're human. It's easy to forget. These are strong patterns. But learning, okay, how can I really listen to that? How can I learn from that? And if you're the one who's been hurt, it takes a lot of courage to be able to share that. Sure, yeah, this is how I was impacted. Whether it was intentioned or not, this is how I felt from that. This is how it affected my life. So this, what I've just described, is kind of the very practical process of how to work through those hurts, those places we've felt transgressed upon, and those ways we've caused harm with other people. There's also a deeper level, which I think is equally important, if not more so. I don't know if it's more so. Let's say equally important. And this ties more clearly into Dharma practice. Because underneath all those emotions, all those beliefs, is also how we fix ourselves into something that's unchanging. And how we fix the other person with someone who's not changing. We're not relating to them how they are in the present moment. We're relating from our wounding, our trauma, are hurt. And we hold ourselves fixed in that. We hold them fixed in that. To get a sense of this, let's look for a moment at what the opposite of forgiveness is. That's when we just entrench ourselves. We dig that trench. We say, I'm going to hold on to this pain, this idea. I rehearse it, the hardened anger, the resentment. I hear stories about people who, you know, families often, brothers, sons, fathers, mothers and daughters, siblings, who've had some conflict. And instead of meeting them and working with it, they say, okay, I'm going to give you the silent treatment. I'm going to stop talking. And they forget to stop, they forget to end that. And years and years go by without ever sharing that. Maybe even forget the original cause, but they haven't forgotten that hardness. Okay, I won't talk to this person. So we're in that hardness of heart. We really fix that person in our memory, in our perception, how they were in the past, and this is how they always will be. There's not a room for them to grow, to change. And of course, we've done the same thing to ourselves. We fixed ourselves. And it doesn't matter if you're the one who's the transgressor or the transgress. It can be that fixing of things. So going through that first process of really acknowledging it allows us to start to loosen that fixation. Because it's bringing what's historic and how it's impacting and shaping how we see the world into the present moment. We're seeing it clearly. We're acknowledging. We're touching the pain in a way we've never perhaps touched before. And in that touching, you start to free up that hardness, that fixation, that solidity. Is that sense of fixing, of solidifying, holding ourselves or someone else into a locked belief, it's a form of violence. Because you're no longer allowing them to be alive, to grow, to change. And when we have trouble forgiving, it's often because there's pain in ourselves. There's pain that's feels like it's too much to hold, too much to open to. So we're being compassionate with ourselves, learning to work in a way that's possible, that's doable, finding those little inroads and how do I connect with this pain. Instead of adding to that pain, reinforcing that. So how do we unfix ourselves? To listen deeply. I remember my wife and I learned this process of learning to really listen deeply and reflect, paraphrase what you've heard. And I don't know if you've ever had this issue, but feeling really upset at someone you really care about, and you just can't, you're just so stuck in your opinions, your ideas, and they're so stuck in theirs, there's no connection. So at some point, we find this willingness to sit down next to each other and start to talk. One person talks and shares, other person paraphrases it, reflects it in a way that the other person says, yeah, you've got it, that's right. And so many times when I've started this, I just could not believe, I did not believe, or I just had such a different point of view. But being willing just to acknowledge that this other person has their own point of view. And by just listening, it's miraculous that at some point I let go of my own point of view. I'm actually really let in what my loved one or another person is saying. That's that loosening of that fixation. And then forgiveness is possible. Then forgiveness starts to open through that deep acknowledgement, that sense of really connecting with each other. So this is this paradox of Dharma practitioners, that sometimes we hold things in such so much emptiness, so much stillness, we kind of feel like we can kind of jump over or bypass this real pain that we have. And so learning to turn toward that, to meet that. At the same time, to see where we take things very personally, to be willing to work with it, to touch it and acknowledge it to the point we actually see the emptiness within it. There's this beautiful dance of how to integrate our lives into our practice. But forgiveness is a very real way of doing it. It's important when we feel that sense of, when you really want to be connected to someone, you feel that edge of disconnection, of hurt. See, how can I meet that? How can I share what needs to be shared? And sometimes it's amazing how much the charge of it is much more than the actual doing of it. And there's that lightness, the release. And eventually forgiveness just happens. Something releases in us. Just to finish with a poem. On one morning. One morning we will wake up and forget to build that wall we've been building. The one between us. The one we've been building for years, perhaps. Out of some sense of right and boundary. Perhaps out of habit. One morning, we will wake up and let our empty hands hang empty at our sides. Perhaps they will rise, as empty things sometimes do when blown by the wind. Perhaps they simply will not remember how to grasp, how to rage. We will wake up that morning, and we will have misplaced all our theories about why and how and who did what to whom. We will have mislaid all our timelines of when and plans of what, and we will not scramble to write the plans and theories anew. On that morning, not much else will have changed. Whatever is blooming will still be in bloom. Whatever is wilting will wilt. There will be fields to plow and trains to load and children to feed and work to do. And in every moment, in every action, we will feel the urge to say thank you. We will follow the urge to bow. One Morning by Rosemary Matola Trommer. All right, if you could just sit quiet for a couple moments as we let those words go and then move to Tori.
Tim and I have been doing this so often, so many times. We've been together for so long. I'm amazed sometimes how we think so much alike, just the way we talk. Very special that way. Because I want to talk about what is called reconciliation, but from this Dhamma perspective, it's a little different than the way that we think of it in a Judeo-Christian kind of reconciliation, meaning that we got to get along. So somehow I got to start liking the person. But Tim so beautifully explained the practical application of learning how to forgive. The practice, just the practice itself, this internal felt sense relationship with myself when there's harm, whether the harm I did to someone else or the harm that someone did to me. What he is pointing to is the willingness to practice with the felt sense of harm. And when we're actually willing to practice with the felt sense of harm, you begin to realize something, which is that we pretty much harm each other all the time. And unless we are in a state where we are present and attentive to any movement I make or anything I say or any thoughts in my mind, our go-to energy is more around harm. This way that Tim was pointing to the fixation that we do in life. And that fixation is kind of a violent act. Even the fixation on who we are or what we think we are or who someone else is, this fixation is in and of itself this kind of violent act that generates harm of some kind, suffering of some kind. The practice that we're doing is to see that harm, is to begin to feel that harm, this constant, continuous harm that happens. And the more we are able to feel that harm and to get to this place where Tim was pointing to the natural release that comes from learning to practice with harm, the more we're able to let something else in, like he was talking about when he has these conversations and he begins to open. And what gets let in is reconciliation. I guess I would say the Dhamma's version of reconciliation. It's not reconciliation with the other person. It's reconciliation with yourself. It's wholeness with yourself. It's the place of blamelessness, which is what Buddha was pointing to, that the whole of the practice is around touching into blamelessness. But given that we continuously harm, for years I thought, how in the world would I ever become blameless if I'm always doing harm? And actually, when we begin to feel that harm, as Tim was pointing out, this the impact of it, the acknowledgement of it, and this inner desire to have this commitment not to be in this harm, either to not let myself be harmed by another person again, or I'm not going to harm, that commitment to try to alleviate that harm. Over time, a natural sort of connection begins to happen, and we begin to let go of this tension or this resentment or this frustration or anger around the harm. And there's an opening there that Tim was pointing to. What then happens in that opening, and this is where I want to spend the rest of my time talking, is what happens when this opening happens and we begin to let go of that constriction in the heart where the harm once was. What happens is that this capacity to feel harm allows us to see harm before it ever happens. It allows the truth of harm to actually come inside us, and we know it. We're intimate with it, have a relationship with harm. And in that relationship, we can sort of, it's like the pause before we harm. It's the capacity to actually not harm another person. You can see it on retreat, for those of you that have been on retreat. When you first get on the land, you don't really think about the ants or the worms or anybody else that's on the land. You might think that if you go to Spirit Rock, you might think that little lizards are cute, but you don't really think about them. And then after a bit, after the heart begins to, you begin to let go of all the hindrance and the anger and the wanting my way and all the angst and tensions and things that you have in your head, the thoughts about who did what and what I should have said. And after all that begins to go away, then what begins to happen, what fills that void is generosity. It's kindness. It's love. It's the paramis. It's what fills our hearts when it's not overrun with harm. And then without you ever doing anything except practice, you walk around caring for these little beings. I've seen people take sticks and move the worm to the other side of the path so they don't get stepped on. I mean, I've always worried about whether or not that was the way they were going. I mean, they could have been trying. They could have been like, lady, you just put me back where I came from. But there's all this care to make sure all these little beings are out of the way. So there was a path of ants moving across the pathway. It's a big, like, road at Spirit Rock if you've never been there. And when a mealtime comes, people just begin to walk down the path. You don't necessarily pay attention. So somebody built this little fortress around these ants so that you had to step over the fortress in order to get to keep going and avoid all the ants. There's a way in which we can see harm. And this requires us to change our understanding of harm. We have to change from this sense that harm is somehow a terrible thing. I never want to admit that I do it. I certainly don't want any harm around me, and I don't want to cause any harm to anyone else. And that ordinary, egoic kind of understanding puts us in a situation where oftentimes we won't acknowledge or admit the impact of our behavior. But when we get personal and do this practice, as Tim's pointing out, with harm, now we're comfortable with it. I'm comfortable with the pain of harm. I'm comfortable with the uncomfortability of knowing I hurt someone or the impact of my actions was not so helpful, even though I meant it to be helpful. This getting comfortable with the uncomfortableness of harm allows us to know when harm is afoot, when harm is around. It's a Mary Oliver's poem around, we begin to sense it. I can tell something is amiss here. Danger. I'm really angry or triggered and I might cause harm. We can sense that. And when we can sense that, the paramis, these 10 perfections of heart that strengthen our ability to be with the difficult. So we can begin to be with things like generosity, loving kindness, resolve not to cause any harm, and truthfulness and admitting when we've done some harm, or this sense of equanimity and determination. These paramis actually come into the It's almost they come into existence because instead of operating out of the ordinary mind that Tim was pointing to, we're actually operating out of the heart. Just much more generous, much more loving, much more open and caring. Much more giving, accepting. It's much more in the present moment with what is. Even the pain of it. So oftentimes, one of the reasons why we wanted to do these ceremonies every year, because, you know, since it's gone through some hard times, we've stepped on each other's toes a lot. It's difficult. But when Tim and I first started taking on this guiding teacher role, we realized that if we did not create a ceremony which allowed us to acknowledge that harm happens and create space for the paramis to come in and flourish, we would just be building an entire organization on the possibility of harm. And then people would, when they couldn't take it anymore, they would leave. And then we would not see them anymore. And we wouldn't have never known that the reason why they stopped coming was because some harm was done and there was never an opportunity to ask or seek forgiveness. So we realized that we had to come to some place where we could get comfortable with the discomfort that harm actually happens as part of a sangha. It's the nature of sangha for us to harm each other. And then to do it as a ceremony is what really provides the ground for us to do this. See, we know each other by our faces. We've seen each other. We've practiced together a lot. We care a lot about each other. But we don't really know each other. I mean, some of you, I've never been to your house. I don't even know what part of the city you live in. I don't even know if you live in Seattle or you don't live in Seattle. You don't know where I live. You've never been to my house. There's so much of our lives that we don't really know about each other. And yet we feel so close because we practice together. So this kind of closeness generates in and of itself the potentiality for harm to happen because we're close, because we're connected, because we talk to each other when somebody's in a bad mood and snap and, you know, or if you're talking to me, I'm always on my phone. I'm supposed to be on Zoom, but I have ADD, so I can't do one thing at once. It's very hard. So I'm like trying to do things on my phone, do things over here, talking on Zoom. And you could be on Zoom with me and say, that's so offensive. It could be that way. I don't even think about it, but it could be impactful. So every year, we get together and we do a general ceremony. The ceremony is general. So you don't have to look out there and tell someone, oh, I did some harm to you. Please forgive me. Each individual person. No, it's general. It's this acknowledgement that we all harm. And when we're intimate, you can pretty much bank on that you have harmed someone else, whether you intended it that way or not. So the general ceremony is for us to come in right relationship with forgiveness, with harm, this acknowledging that Tim is pointing to in this recognition of the impact of our behavior. And then we do the ceremony in a way. We do two ceremonies. The first ceremony that Tim's going to do is really just this asking for forgiveness and this sharing of forgiveness. You're not forgiving anybody. You're just creating the space for us to acknowledge the harm and ceremonial asking for forgiveness. I read once that the monastic tradition is to do this, and you're actually asking for forgiveness to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. That's who you're asking for forgiveness, because when we do harm, it's not the harm to the other person, it's the harm that we do to the Dhamma, the harm that we do to the Buddha's teachings, the harm that we do to the Sangha. That's what you're asking for forgiveness from. And then The second part of the ceremony is a bowing ceremony with the chant that we use. And this is the bowing ceremony of Kuan Yin to allow for compassion and the paramis to come back into the heart so that we get, we have a reconciliation with ourselves for whatever harm that could have happened. The reconciliation is with us so that we become back center again and we can start a whole new year together, connected. So the idea is during this ceremony to truly let go of whatever you may be holding on to, some irritation, something you didn't like, some edge. It could be at Sims, or it could be with someone else outside of Sims. It could just be something that's out there, this opportunity to see that harm impacts the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. And it's an opportunity by yourself, quietly, to let it go. And then the bowing, I'll explain how we're going to do that, is an opportunity to open the heart and let this capacity for compassion and metta and equanimity, determination, integrity, truth, all of it, all of these generous, patient qualities, to let that come in and hold you rather than being stuck in the tension of harm. So that is our, that's what we're going to do for the rest of the evening. It's just this ceremony, both the formal asking of forgiveness and the bowing. So I'll let Tim explain the formal asking, which is what we're about to do. But we'll, I guess we'll just sit a moment just so I can, so there can be a smoother transition. We'll just take a moment and think. I'll read Mary Oliver's poem again. Angels are wonderful, but they are so, well, aloof. It's what I sense in the mud and the roots of the trees, or the well, or the barn, or the rock with its citron map of lichen that halts my feet and makes my eyes flare. Feeling the presence of some spirit, some small god who abides there. If I were a perfect person, I would be bowing continuously. I'm not, though I pause wherever I feel this holiness, which is why I'm so often late coming back from wherever I went. Forgive me.
All right, so Dra, if you could post that forgiveness phrases for the group. Great, and those in the room, hopefully you're able to pick one up as over by the Donna baskets. So we're going to do this in two cycles. The first cycle will be Twer and I asking for forgiveness, and we will also be placeholders for the whole organization, the board, and also the organization historically too. It will bring that sense of holding that as GTs, as guiding teachers, for harm that, you know, we have caused personally, the organization's caused, past leadership has caused. Acknowledge it, asking for forgiveness. And then you have a chance to offer us forgiveness. And what we'll do is we'll read these phrases and bow. That's the first cycle. The second cycle will do the same phrases, but now just anyone in the Sangha or anyone in your life, as Twer was talking about, that you may feel that sense of hardness, a sense of, you know, a chance to become current, to let go to whatever degree is possible in this moment. All right, so we have the phrases.
So we're not going to get on the ground. Can you see it?
Yes. So Twer and I will read this first. Over this
past year, I may have knowingly and unknowingly harmed you in some way by my thoughts, words, or deeds. If I have harmed you in any way, I ask for your forgiveness. Please forgive me. Over this past year, if you believe that you may have knowingly or unknowingly harmed me or another Sangha member in some way by your thoughts, words, or deeds, let us extend our heartfelt forgiveness. You are forgiven.
Now I invite you to read those phrases again. Again, explain this to us and to anyone else in your life. Over
the past year, I may have knowingly and unknowingly harmed you in some way by my thoughts, words, or deeds. If I have harmed you in any way, I ask for your forgiveness. Please forgive me. Over this past year, if you believe that you have knowingly and unknowingly harmed me or another person some way by your thoughts, words, or deeds, let us extend our heartfelt forgiveness. We are forgiven.
Just sit quietly for a few moments.
So this next part is the bowing. It's a Kuan Yin bowing chant that we're going to bow to. I'm going to play this chant and I'll put the, we're going to do it for a while. So you can either bow standing up and just bending at the waist. You can bow while you're seated. You don't have to get up at all. I traditionally only during this chant do I bow on the floor, just because it feels important to me to actually physically move and get down on the ground, even though it hurts my knees and it's all drama. It's hard getting up, it's hard getting down, but I feel like it's so important for me to do that. So you don't have to do that. I'm just sharing that with you. And so we just bow. Tim and I bow at different times. I will bow. I'll start it. And I will bow. And at the end of the chant, the full cycle of the chant, you'll be able to tell. I will get up and then Tim will bow. And then while he is bowing, then I will just sing the chant or hum along with the chant, standing upright. And then as soon as the chant ends, he will get up and I will bow. And we do this back and forth. He gets up, I bow. I bow, he gets up. It goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. The chant just goes on and on and on. It's done by Tenesru and Kizaru. This is a very traditional bowing forgiveness practice that's done. You're not bowing to anything. It's just the felt sense of bowing that helps us loosen up some of the tension around harm and open the heart so that the paramis can come in. So we'll do it for a while. We'll do it for a while. We'll do it for a while. And at some point, when I should be going down, I won't. I'll just stand. When Tim will come back up and I will continue to stand. And that's the way that you know it's over. And then we'll just, you can chant the chant. What we're saying is Namo Kwan Sir Yen Pusa. And we're just saying that over and over and over. And it represents homage to Kuan Yin, the Bodhisattva who listens to the cries of the world. And that's all we're saying. It's just over and over and over and over and over and over and over. So you can just think of your heart opening, the practice itself. You can hum the chant if you want to. You can sing the chant once you get the words of it. Either way, it's all okay. Because this is really just our individual practice here to release some energy and open up the heart and let some new energy in. All right, so I'm going to set this up so I can make sure everybody can hear the chant.
I don't know if it's clear that they should pick one of us to bow.
Oh, that's right. Thank you. So pick either one, Tim or I, to bow. And when you and for those of you here, yeah, we'll just spread out. And then whoever you want to bow with, Tim or I, you just start bowing with them. All right. So let's get the. Okay. That's good. Okay. Let's. Okay. So let's just see if you guys can hear it. Can you hear that? Great. We can hear it, right? Oh. Is this over? So I think you guys can just see us from that larger screen. If you want, Cheryl, you could make that gallery view on that one large screen. Of the room? Gallery, I mean, not gallery, but speaker view for just the room.
If you move over there, I got it turned around.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh,
Switch.
Thank you.
Oh, it's invigorating, isn't it? It's very nice. I do that bowing a lot. Tanesara, it works. I think I've told you guys this maybe one of the other ceremonies, but Tanesara, during the CDL4, when we were particularly upset with each other, we had harmed each other, we had stepped on everybody's toes, we had created the biggest mess of a room full of people that was possible because we were so diverse. And it was so beautiful that first night, being in a room with half the room was BIPOC and half the room was gay, and there was able-bodied and non-able-bodied, all kinds of people that were in that room. And we were so overwhelmed with joy. But by the third day of that retreat, we had stepped on every possible toe you could step on. And all that diversity created all of this harm. And Tanesara, we were pretty much, it was so bad that in the evenings we were supposed to go into noble silence. And one evening we didn't. That Wednesday, nobody went into noble silence. The teacher said, go into noble silence. And we were out in the halls and in the outside area, outside the
the courtyard at Spirit Rock, arguing, yelling, upset at just what had happened with each other. And the next morning, Tanesara, there's like 102 people in that room, and Tanesara walked into the room. She sat down and she said, today we are going to start with a discussion on compassion. She told us this story about Kuan Yin and how Kuan Yin came into being. And then we began to do this bowing for 45 minutes. Up one side, down on the other. Switch. Up one side, down on the other. 45 minutes. Bow. Back and forth. Back and forth. And by the time we finished all that bowing, there wasn't a dry eye in the room. And you had let go of whatever energy was there. The energy changed in the room. And we were able to start talking to one another again, apologizing. We were able to work through. And the very next, so the retreats were 3 retreats in 1 year. It was a total of 5 retreats for the CDL program. So the next retreat, I didn't think hardly anyone would come. And sure enough, everybody came back. I think it was the bowing. 2 people couldn't come because of the shift in their work. But other than that, everybody came back. Somehow we had shifted that energy and we had forgiven each other for whatever harm we had done. And we all kind of stayed together for the whole process. So this is what's possible if we're willing to practice with with this understanding that forgiveness is an inherent part of practice, because inherent in our humanness and living in a conditioned samsaric world, we are going to step on each other's toes and cause harm. So the forgiveness and the ceremonial nature of it is what helps us begin to let go, let go, let go, let go. So try it if you get into difficulty with a partner. We probably should post that, we can post that chant. And you just take turns bowing. You bow, they bow. You bow, they bow. Just keep doing it till you settle down so you can actually talk to each other. If you feel tight and tense, just play the chant and start bowing. You don't have to worry about your thoughts. Just keep bowing. Eventually, the bowing itself, especially if you have a little edge to it, even if it's just bending over, the bowing itself will cause you to let go of whatever you're thinking of. There's something about bowing that helps us regain our sense of humility and center, heart. So I really appreciate everybody being here. I think Tim is doing, those were not the closing words. Those were the pre-closing words. Because Tim is actually the person that does the closing. So that was just the pre-closing words.
All right. Well, I thought those were lovely closing words. So how about let's let the silence close and just sit together for a minute or so in silence and just acknowledging your inner experience, acknowledging the sense of sensation of heart, of emotion, and also acknowledging the sense of community, the sense of connection with the people here practicing tonight and those also in your life who may not be present. That potential, that possibility of forgiving and being forgiven. Thank you all for sharing this evening with us, and have a wonderful evening, and we hope to see you again soon.